C6, number 5A.
So this chapter says, no, if you accept only, really, the translation of God to idea, and only that, if that is your absolute proposition, then you can't accept at the same time another translation, which means that the wrong translation is brought back or traced back to its origin, to its nothingness. Therefore, we can see that this short chapter, Animal Magnetism, has a terrific practical impact on our lives. That actually we should see that everything that happens which is not of God's nature is just blunt animal magnetism. That we should always trace back everything that is not of the nature of idea, should trace it right back always to animal magnetism. Never to a person, never to an age, never to a government, never to the weather, never to this, nor that, and the other. It's always tracing it back to animal magnetism. And therefore, this subject of handling evil or handling animal magnetism is super important. And this is one of the phases of animal magnetism, that animal magnetism tells us not to handle animal magnetism, and has a very good reason for it, and says, you know, you don't need to spend your time and energy on handling animal magnetism, because animal magnetism is nothing. So why spend all your time and energy on nothing? Yes, that's true. Huh? That's true. If we spend all our time and energy for the first translation, then that argument is true. Then it's actually true that we should not handle animal magnetism as animal magnetism, but that we should handle animal magnetism as the divine translation of mind coming constantly to us as the infinite ideas of mind. Then we handle animal magnetism. So again you see the same tone of system thinking, that it says, yes, animal magnetism and the effects of animal magnetism, and we all are under the effects of animal magnetism. Each one that is sitting here, not one that is sitting here can say that he is not under the influence of animal magnetism. Each one who is sitting here is sometimes depressed, sometimes a bit hopeless, sometimes a bit sick, and sometimes a bit unhappy, and sometimes a bit this and that and the other. Where does it come from? Certainly not from the divine mind. It certainly does not come from the divine mind. Why is it there? Because we are not staying and sticking to the divine mind. Therefore, whatever the problem is, it's animal magnetism, but don't handle it as animal magnetism. Handle it. Well, I have now to be careful what I said. Don't handle it as a problem, I would say. How do you handle it? By, again, enlarging, expanding the whole thing into a bigger framework, namely into the framework of the Christ as the Word. Therefore, we handle evil not as evil. Therefore, we don't fight against evil. We don't deny evil as evil. In science, we go and see that always only one thing is going on, and that is the divine translation. Mind coming to me as the infinite ideas of mind. Spirit coming to me as the infinite ideas of spirit. Soul coming to me as the infinite ideas of soul. Principle coming to me as the infinite ideas of principle. Life coming to me as the infinite ideas of life. Truth and love coming to me as the infinite ideas of truth and love. If I'm consciously conscious of this influence of the synonymous term on me, so consciously conscious that there is no room no time left for any other consciousness, then I have handled animal magnetism. So I don't handle animal magnetism as animal magnetism. I handle animal magnetism as the true translation from God to man. Seeing that this is the only translation going on, and therefore seeing that no other translations can ever get on and can ever go on and has ever gone on. Yes, so that's that chapter. See, in a way, I think we have made perhaps the following experience, that over the last few years we are teaching very much from the point of view of the level of science, going out from the Infinite One and going out from that Infinite One and showing how that Infinite One translates itself to the level of divine science, absolute Christian science and Christian science. And there was a certain kind of feeling coming up, oh, God is doing that and is always bringing forth the perfect idea, so we don't have to handle evil anymore. And when I brought out my book on animal magnetism, I could hear that from various sides and quarters. Oh, this is not for us. This is perhaps for the beginners. We don't believe in animal magnetism. We don't need to handle animal magnetism. We have now the levels, and we have now the chart. And in the chart, you have no animal magnetism. And you can see how wrong this is. Because it shows that we feel that just believing that we have the chart is demonstrating that we actually are always in that consciousness. To have the chart as a guide, as a model of being, is one thing, and to have constantly, consciously, that attitude of the chart within ourselves is another thing. And therefore, we have to be aware that when we are not consciously conscious of the eternal influx of the divine mind as the infinite ideas of mind, that animal magnetism has a good chance to enter in. And so I think it's a good thing to consider that Mrs. Eddy felt that animal magnetism has a place, and an important place, in the whole textbook. We go to the next chapter, Science, Theology, and Medicine. It's a terrific chapter. It's the last chapter Mrs. Eddy wrote. And she wrote it after she had gone through that very deep experience of having lost her husband, then going away in quietude to revise Science and Health, to see more about Revelation and bringing in the last part of the Apocalypse, when she said, I found my husband, where she felt, now I got it. And actually, with this chapter, she shows that she got it. What did she get? She got the true idea of God. The true idea of God came to her. Can you see what that means? Christ as Christ. The translation of God to the point of idea, the Christ translation, bringing to her the true idea of science. Manifesting itself, therefore, as the idea of God, giving for the first time in that chapter, really, the fundamental constituents of being. Here she describes through the whole chapter, actually, that now God has been revealed to her through the translation of mind to the point of idea of mind. Doing what? Retranslate things, a concept of mortal mind, showing it to be nothing, and therefore bringing it back to the one mind. And so, with every synonymous term, she shows how spirit translates itself as the idea of spirit, and therefore retranslates the false concept of matter and flesh back to spirit. And she goes on and shows that with soul translating itself and presenting to herself the idea of soul, doing thereby what? Retranslating sense testimony back into the testimony of the spiritual sense of soul. And so with principle, in a wonderful way, it's the best part really in the textbook where she explains science, where in the part of principle she explains how principle translates itself as the idea of principle, as the true sense of science, thereby retranslating back the false concept of a science into the true idea of science. Then she goes to theology and shows that this brings in a living science. Theology as a living science, as a science of life, showing how life translates itself to us as the idea of life, and that this would retranslate a theological sense of life, a church's sense of life, a ritual sense of life, a religious sense of life, back into a living, demonstrable sense of life. And then in the part on medicine, she shows how truth translates itself as the idea of truth, the idea of the true medicine. And in this way, translating back the false concept of medicine back into the one mind as the medicine and remedy of truth. And so in this chapter, we find what? We find the translation of God to the point of idea. What idea? The idea of God. Therefore, she presents here how the idea of God, now comes the horizontal, manifests itself in spite of the false constituents of the human system of reference. So we have a terrific fundamental, basic translation and retranslation in this chapter, as in no other chapter. Mind translating itself as the idea of mind and therefore retranslating mortal mind. Spirit translating itself as the idea of spirit and therefore retranslating matter back into spirit. Soul translating itself as the idea of soul and therefore retranslating the testimony of the physical senses into the spiritual sense of soul. Principle translating itself as the idea of principle or science and retranslating the false concept of science into the true sense of science. Can you hear the flow of it? It always had to do not with some little false concept, always with the fundamental false concept about God. Mind, mortal mind. Spirit, flesh. Soul, sense testimony. Science, principle, and science of principle against human opinions, human authorities, human sciences. Life against the dead religion. Truth against false remedies. And this way we find here that the constituents of the human system of reference on which the whole world is built, according to which the whole world is thinking, has been retranslated into the true system of reference. So, you see what happens here in this chapter. That really here, the basic, wrong, human concept on which the whole mankind, the whole evolution, the whole material world operates, is being tackled. Not just some kind of a false belief like heredity or dishonesty or things like that. It's the fundamental elements that constitute the human system of reference is tackled here. And in place of that, she presents now the true system of reference. And so the true system of reference retranslates the wrong system of reference back into God. Terrific chapter. If one considers this chapter in its wholeness, one really finds, oh golly, now I have got right back to the root of all evil. To that root which presents itself as mortal mind, matter, and sense testimony, and saying, out of these rings I make a new theory, a human opinion, and then I operate on that human opinion as a false sense of life, material life, false sense of truth, namely that there is intelligence in matter, truth in matter, a remedy in matter, and so just annihilating and resolving, I would say, the wrong system of reference of our life. I sometimes wonder if we really give to the important thing the time we need, and to the unimportant thing also a little share, and not the other way around. The human mind usually runs after little problems. They are the thing. Each one tells about their little problems, you know, just the tiny little problems. The world is not talking about, not interested in it, not in the slightest interested in it, and not even the friend to whom they tell all these little problems is interested in it. He has to be polite and say yes, 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 like I do, and and you know it, it's no more a secret. I'm well known that I answer usually just yes, 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 yes. You see, one has to be a bit rational about one's energies, economical about one's energies. One should give more time to the problems that are more important, and less time or no time to the problems that are not important. If we don't do that, then we mismanage our time and our energy and our thinking and everything. Here in the textbook, if we look at it properly, we have the Christ as Christ, the great Savior, Christ as Christ, the great Savior. It's here on the diagonal. And that very chapter tells us, you know, the important problem you have to solve are not your daily little problems, but that you see what is the true system of reference on which you build. And get acquainted with that. If we have a cultured sense of the true system of reference, practically all the problems fall into place. They resolve themselves. That's why you always will find that students who are mostly interested, not in these little details and little questions and happenings and so on, and experiences, but who are interested in the fundamental aspects of being, that they have very few problems, if at all any, because they are not thinking small. If you are thinking small, we have parts, and then we have all the problems we like. If you are thinking big, then all the parts fall into place in the wholeness and the bigness of it. Therefore, actually, we should find here in this chapter where our heart should be, where our energy, where our devotion should be. It's not solving our human problems. Again, you have the same thing. Enlarge your system. Enlarge your wholeness. And see that being is based on mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love. And that being is not based on mortal mind, on matter, on sense testimony, on human sciences and opinions, on a dead ritual, routine life, not based on a false remedy, that this is what has to be resolved into the wholeness of being. And to think for hours, I don't want to say for the long evening, winter nights, they don't believe me that in California and in other countries because they don't have these long winter nights. But that is, you see, what should really be our practice. These are the difficult, what we could call them, problems. To see that we fill our consciousness and culture our consciousness in the new system of reference, in the constituents of being as the synonymous terms and their ideas. And this is what this chapter here shows us. The other chapters don't do that. This is unique to it. And what is unique in it is also that in the part of science, he really gives us a clear answer to her concept of science. And sometimes when we think and look out into the world and feel that the world is slowly converging towards the teaching of Christian Science, which is in a way true, if we read then what Mrs. Eddy conceives under the term science, then we still feel that the gap is still terrific, is still very broad, very wide, you say. Huh? The gap is wide. Her concept of science is that all science is divine. No other science does accept that yet. She says that only laws that are divine are actually laws of science. Nobody would yet agree quite to that. They still see laws as laws of matter. And she conceives that only revelation is telling us the truth. Truth is a revelation. In the other sciences, they begin to see, yes, intuition, not revelation. Intuition plays a great part in science, but only a part. It's not the whole. It's still mixed up with reason. Whereas her concept of science is that it must come from the translation of divine mind to us, so that revelation and logic coincide. The other sciences don't accept that yet. They make certain concessions, yes, but this chapter here, I like to go through it, through especially that part on principle, just shows how strong Mrs. Eddy's concept of science is and how it diverges still considerably from the human concept of science.